Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's get started.
Straight from New York, yo, yo, this handsome ass.
You are now tuned in to Al Joe the Funk Master. Watch your grill, yoga, knocked out cold fast. And talking shit, now we talking facts. With the mountain off the back, you in trouble, came to burst your bubble. I don't shelter punches, they find home on your mind about a double. This the weekly scraps. You don't need a map, GPS, I'm right here to lead a dash. The world doesn't know it needs, but I grow disease. Planet fuck a name and a fame, only legacy remains. Remember the name, Al Jermaine Sterling.
It ain't shit, it ain't shit.
Motherfuckers.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the weekly scraps. UFC 283 is in the books and great results, especially from being friends and I guess somewhat acquaintances of some good people and seeing good things happen for them. There's no better feeling than that, because although you're not the one that's winning, it almost feels like you did. You know what I mean? So shout out to Jamal Hill, realizing a dream. Brandon Moreno, ending this quadrilogy, if that's even the correct term for this. Both these guys, really good down-to-earth people. I'm not saying that Glover Teixeira isn't. I'm not saying Davison Figueiredo isn't. But I know these guys personally. And, man, much respect and much props to these guys. I've gotten to train with Moreno, gotten to see, learn about him more on a little bit more in depth, more on a personal level, just seeing what his work ethic is like and things like that and how hard he prepares himself inside and outside the octagon. Jamal Hill, I jokingly said, like, this man, this man has six kids and he got to make sure those kids got to eat. And he made sure that they ate. Congrats to him, seizing the opportunity, short notice for him and Glover Teixeira. Maybe Teixeira didn't have enough time to prepare for the style of Jamal Hill. But it's the same thing, vice versa, for Jamal Hill preparing for Glover Teixeira as well. Shockingly, I was very, very impressed. Oh, this is my Georgian Swanee Man hat from Swanetti, Sterliani. Shout out to all my Georgian people out there. Georgian power, baby. Let's go. I know this is Italian. Guys, come on. Come on. Let's have a little bit of fun. But I was very impressed with Jamal Hill and how he was able to stuff a lot of those takedowns of Glover Teixeira. And even when he did get taken down, doing the right things, when he was in these positions that most people will probably panic in, give up their back, give up that head and arm choke, and just say, you know what? We made it to a championship title. We had a good day in the office, and this is enough for me. I'm going to find a way out. You know what I mean? And that's not what Jamal Hill did whatsoever. He was able to battle out of the position where Glover Teixeira is extremely strong in when it comes to his BJJ game. And I'm telling you, I'm just impressed with Jamal Hill, how he was able to get out of those positions. I would like to go over the sequences and see how he was able to come out the back door a couple of times and get out from underneath Glover Teixeira. Some real, part of it was pretty technical, and part of it felt like Teixeira kind of maybe rushed the position, thinking that he had Jamal Hill, I guess, kind of bested in those positions where he kind of made some mistakes, so to speak. Usually in BJJ, at least for me, from my perspective, whenever I get someone in a dominant position where there's mount or back control or side control, I can literally keep you there if I choose to just keep you there, if you're my size, of course. Now, when I try to advance position, I try to look for submissions. Once I adjust my movement and I start to progress, it leaves a window of opportunity for your opponent to escape, maneuver, get the hips in play, get the knee lines in play for them to create some space and look for opportunities to get out of there or to get to a better position, reclaiming guard, getting to a single leg, or even reversing the position altogether and getting the sweep and getting on top. You know what I mean? So, again, Glover Teixeira did some really good things when he did get the fight to the ground, but Jamal Hill, very patient, took his time, and was able to capitalize on the opportunities to escape. Now his record is 12-1, UFC champion. Man, it's got to feel so good. I felt bad for Glover, man. I really do, because I've met him before, but I've never really had like 2 months. I don't think the conversation was really that long. I think my coaches might have talked to him more than I did. But I know he's a good dude, good family man as well. But I've actually hung out with Jamal Hill. But again, I felt bad for Glover because for me, for him to get that belt again at 43 is just this unprecedented thing that I don't think we're going to see again for a very, very long time in this sport, that the way these athletes are excelling in their skill set, I don't know anybody else who's going to be able to come and beat these young, hungry killers at that age. It's just such a hard thing to do. So congrats to Glover, man, for going out there and putting it on the line again. Fought for the belt 3 different times against John Jones, came up short, came back, a couple of ups and downs. I know he got knocked out by Rumble Johnson, the Alexander Gustafsson fight, and then comes back and look at Gustafsson, and then Rumble actually got to fight for the belt again. But then he comes back, he fights Blachowicz, wins the belt, loses it, and his next one to Jiří in a crazy back and forth fight, and then comes back and fights for a title again. And it was just right there once again to become a UFC champion. But once a champion in this sport, always a champion in this sport. And again, thank you, Glover Teixeira, for all the fun fights. I think he said he was going to retire. It could be one of those things that is like right after the fights, the emotions. But again, taking those type of punishments, the cuts that he had on his face and his eyebrows, at his age, the scar tissue is not really going to get all that much better, you know? Which means every time he competes, if he gets punched, it's that more prone to being split back open. And at his age, you know, you kind of have to wonder, like, how much is enough? Like, when you keep chasing that glory. And that's why we, as athletes, do this for so long, longer than we should. It's chasing that hunt for that glory just to hear the cheers. Or even if it's the boos, because it just, something about it is exhilarating. And as Kanye was said, it gets the people going, you know, which is the athletes. And that's why we do it. Like, even from, I can speak for myself. I love to compete because I love the roar of the crowd. I love the props for going through the hard work and people acknowledging, hey, congrats on that last one. You worked really, really hard. Or congrats on that last one. That was fun to watch. You deserve it. It's kind of like, what's the proper word for this? I really can't even put my, it's on the tip of my tongue right now. But the acknowledgement of just that, knowing the work and sacrifice that you put in, and you get something at the end of the tunnel, end of the rainbow, it's that. You know, of course, it's prize fighting. We get money now. So it's life-changing opportunities to go in there and make that type of income in such a short amount of time. 8 to 12 weeks of a training camp. And then if you only fought once for the year at this championship level, you're doing pretty good for yourself, you know? But of course, you got to be winning. So again, thank you, Glover Teixeira, for all the memories, all the great fights that you put out there, being a trailblazer that you're never too old to chase a dream as long as you put in the work and you truly do believe and you're honest about it. Honest, hard work can get you very, very far. No cutting corners. He wasn't giving any handouts. He took the hard road. I know exactly what that feels like. And he made it. He might be back here again. But thank you for the memories, man. It's been a pleasure watching Glover Teixeira because the guy's an absolute stud. And again, congrats to Jamahal Hill on taking out a veteran like Teixeira. That's not easy to do. Look at the guys who have actually beaten Teixeira. It's a very tough one. And Jamahal had a tough hill to climb. No pun intended on that. But he got it done. And his boxing looked crisp. He was picking those shots to the body nice. I thought the kicks, if he was throwing too many kicks, he might get them caught. But he did a great job of just taking his time, being patient, and still making it a fun fight. There was some back and forth moments. It wasn't a boring title fight. And it was the anticipation of, can Glover get Jamahal Hill down? And if he does, what's going to happen? I think Jamahal Hill passed those tests with flying colors. I can't wait to see what's next for the young stud. Maybe he fights Blachowicz. Maybe he fights Jiří Pochałka when he comes back. Pochałka, whatever. Close enough. People butcher my name all the time. I'm sorry, Jiří. And maybe Ankalaev. There's a lot of good contenders out there for him to fight. Anthony Smith, I know he trained with him. I'm very much looking forward to see what is next for Jamahal Hill. Guys, his Instagram following is under 130K when I looked this morning. Go follow this guy. He's good TV. He makes fun TikToks. He makes fun content for people. And he's the UFC world light heavyweight champion. He might not be known to the masses right now, But follow Jamal Hill. He has a very intriguing story. And again, father of six kids. I mean, talking about fighting for the kids and putting food on the table, this is the true definition of that. And Jamal Hill, let's slow down on the baby making music, because I think we got enough. But hey, I ain't gonna tell you what to do, because you a bad man and you the champ. So you do you, bro. You do you. Brandon Moreno, TKO stoppage, doctor stops it in the end of the third round. Good momentum going back and forth, but you could kind of tell Moreno was kind of having his way in the fight. Like, the first round was very close. I thought the second round was maybe closer than the first, but I still leaned towards Moreno going into that third round. And then that third round, he landed that punch, the knuckle of when he threw that hook right in the eye socket. And I know what that feels like, man. That's, it's like blurring of your vision. It's hard for you to really see. And with that being said, it's just shit luck sometimes. Sometimes that's the way the game goes. And I know people were throwing stuff at Moreno on his way out of the arena, which is pretty foul. Brazil, you should be nicer than that. I believe his wife was behind him. My fiance pointed that out. And I was like, dude, that's so messed up. Like, the guy won. He fought a fair, legal fight. Figueiredo came up short. He gave it all he could. But sometimes that's just the way the game goes. Figueiredo's going to come back. I know he's coming up to 135, which... very, very intrigued by that to see how he does. I know he's a big boy. Reminds me of myself. I think he's an in-betweener, though, like myself. Not big enough for 135. Not the smallest 35er. And I'm not the biggest 45er, but I'm also not the... Maybe I'm probably one of these smaller guys at 45, I think, if I go up. Or should I say when I go up? I thought it was a great fight. A lot of back and forth for the most part. But again, I thought Moreno's mixing in the wrestling is one of those things I felt like was missing from the third fight that they had. It was more so boxing focus, which gave Figueiredo more opportunities to hit those takedowns. And I'm like, Brandon, if you, and I didn't tell him this, but I'm saying in my head, I'm like, if Brandon goes out there and he wrestles Figueiredo, Figueiredo is going to get tired. He's very muscle bound. You look at the physique difference. And that tires you out. There's a lot to be said about that, having a lot of muscles coming into these fights. And I think that might have played a big factor in Figueiredo slowing down, because he looked great on the scales at the weigh-ins. I don't think he was overly drained. I think he had a proper weight cut this time. And again, it's just tough. It's just one of those things. We all go through it, but we make the weight and we show up and we compete. I just think it was Moreno's night. And I do think if these guys fought 20 times, Moreno should win about anywhere from 13 to 15 of those fights, I would say, because it's that evenly contested. But I do think Moreno is slightly better in skill set. But if you have a situation like this where you get punched in the eye and you can't see, it changes things. Good thing they didn't let him continue, because it was only going to get worse. If his other eye got shot, that's not a good night for Figueiredo and his family, you know. So very good fight. And for the guy who said Figgy and Cejudo would kill Moreno and Sterling, guys, I'm just saying, if this was a tag team match, we're up 1-0 right now. That means the two of us get to jump Henry. Henry, bring that shit, baby. Bring it. And, you pulled out the fight. Guys, there was never a fight. I never signed a contract, so there was never a fight. It was discussed. I said I would like to fight Henry. It was never a contract. So don't say I pulled out of the fight. I didn't pull out of the fight, because there was never a fight. It was discussed. It was something that we both wanted. But again, as I told them, the matchmakers, I need to make sure I'm A1 first if I'm going to fight Henry Cejudo. If it's O'Malley, if it's anybody else that's more of a striker, I'm willing to roll the dice again and see how I do. That's just me. And if I lose, I lose. That's the way the game goes, man. Life goes on. Sometimes people just get too hung up about things, and that keeps you in one position. You want to progress, you know? And the only way to progress is to take those lessons from those L's and see how you can get better and improve in your life. And that's it. That's all you can control. And when you can focus on what you control, it gives you better management of expectations, because at least you know you did everything that you possibly could to win. Babe, can you turn that on for me? The one right here that's facing me? Yeah, this one. Yeah, just turn it on. Next up, we have Gilbert Burns versus Neil Magny. This was a fight that I felt like if Burns were to gas himself out, Magny would come on late and have a good night. But Burns is just one of those guys, like his style. Like if you look at who's Magny has lost to, this recent, his most recent loss, Shavkat, if I'm not mistaken. Let me see. Shavkat, guillotine choke round two. And then the one that I remember, where is it? Damian Maia back in 2015 when he got submitted by rear naked choke. Okay, I know that was a very long time ago. And after that fight, props to Neil Magny because he went to Damian Maia's seminar to work on his grappling. Cool. Very humbling. And to humble yourself low enough to go to someone who literally just beat you and go learn from them, that's a lot of props. And that takes a man to realize that and to do something like that. It takes a lot of balls and maturity to want to do something like that. Then he goes on the Ariel Helwani interview and he talks about his matchup with Khamzat Chimaev in grappling. And he goes, he effed around and found out. So me, I'm putting the pieces to the puzzle together. And I'm like, if I'm Burns and I'm listening to this, or I'm Burns' camp and I'm listening to this, I'm like, why am I going to risk a whole lot of boha and start scrapping it up with Neil Magny, who's very durable, very tough, and he manages to stay in the fight. And then he starts to pull away. When I could be like, well, I'm a world champion savage on the ground. Why not just go out there and take him down and do what these other guys have done recently and back in the past, and what he literally just disclosed about the grappling. I'm going to go out there and be like, all right, well, I just need one opening to take this guy down. I'm going to do what I do best, and that's submit people. We all know Burns can crack. It's good for him to finally come back and get in the win column in a big way. I was pulling for him because he had that loss to Chimaev. I like both those guys, but Burns is a super down-to-earth dude, and I want to see good things happen for him. His wife is very nice. I think her and my fiance actually talked a couple times. So it's cool, you know. And people like that, I just like to see good things happen for them, you know. So for him to come back and bounce back in a big way and get a first round finish like that over a tough and always durable Neil Magny, that says a lot. People are going to say, oh, well, he has no grappling. Yeah, but Magny has beaten a ton of people. He's the most winningest welterweight out there, if I do remember correctly. So congrats to Burns. Nasty head and arm choke. It was almost like Magny just put his arm out and extended it. And was like, and okay, I'm done. And that's how it goes sometimes. Like, you know, someone's got the squeeze on you. It's like, let me see how long I can hold out to see if maybe there's a chance I can get out of this. But Burns is a savage. He wasn't letting that man out of that at all. Next up, Jessica Andrade versus Laura Murphy. This was, come on, man. This was tough to watch. There's something to be said about, and again, I'm not being judgmental here, but I put myself in these positions and I try to say, okay, from my perspective, if I had my fiance in the corner and she seen me taking a beating like that, going into the third round after two rounds of a beating, my face is being like changing clearly right before your very eyes, I'm going into the third round now. So in between that corner, I feel like if I was cornering my fiance or she was cornering me, I would be okay with her saying something along the lines of, I don't want to stop this fight, but you need to show me something within the first minute because I can't have you out there just being tough. Tough doesn't cut it. Unless you have a record for being tough and coming back and winning fights, that's another discussion. We're not talking about that. We're talking about just being tough so you can make it to the end of the bell. This went to a decision. But there's probably 100 punches at least that Lauren Murphy, in my opinion, did not need to take. And I'm not saying her husband is bad. I'm not saying her team is bad. We're fighters. At the end of the day, we want to fight to the very end. We want to hope that we can land that haymaker punch. But in this one, what I'm saying is, if I see you competing and I don't see you fighting back, I'm like, not just throwing a punch here and one punch there. It has to have some pop on it. It has to mean something. It has to have purpose. If you're just out there throwing like a jab that's half speed and then you're just circling and then you're getting punched 5 to 10 more times, that's not enough for me to be like, okay, I feel you can come back in this fight. You know what I mean? So I'm not trying to be harsh on Murphy. I'm not trying to be harsh on her team. But Andrade is an animal. She reminds me of a Vanderlei Silva hybrid with John Lineker in a female's body that just destroys people. The only people who have beaten Andrade that I can remember are Shevchenko and Wei Li. Other than that, who has she actually lost to? Rose Namajunas by split. Okay. Joanna Jędrzejczyk. That one was a little bit more one-sided for Joanna because she's that much more technical than Jessica Andrade. But I just want people to keep that in mind that Andrade is no slouch. She's one of those. She's one of the best girls at strawweight, one of the best girls at flyweight. And she used to fight at bantamweight at 135, and she was kicking ass there too. You know what I mean? So there's no shame in Lauren Murphy losing to her, a former champion. My only question is, how long or how many fights can you actually have like that that's so one-sided where you're taking so much damage that it's like, okay. And we're talking about longevity here. We're not talking about like when you're beaten, I'm almost like in the, I mean, I'm torn on this. I don't want to have to make the decision because if you give me the option to decide that, I'm going to always be like, I'm going to fight through until the very end. And I know some people are going to go, oh, you're an actor. Shut up. I was never given an option about can you continue. That option was taken away from me. And rightfully so, because if you had told me, I'm going to give you the remainder 2.5 minutes to see what happens and if you can recover and you could compete, I'm going to stay there and I'm going to do that and I'm going to compete because that's what fighters do. We're not our best friends in those situations. We're our worst enemies. And I think I would have been happy if my coach said that to me and made me have to dig deep within myself and go, okay, I just heard the boss, man. What am I going to do to give myself an opportunity to stay in this fight and to show that I can still have a chance to win this? And that's the most important thing. We don't want to sit here and just be a punching bag. I'm not even talking about the Lauren Murphy fight. I'm talking in general. I just don't want to be a punching bag to say I'm tough. I don't want people patting me on my back and saying, you're so tough. There's nothing good about just being tough. Like, I want to be known as the skilled guy. I want to be known as the person that's hard to hit. I want to be known as the person who's hard to submit and never gives up and beat so many different people. Not that you are one of the toughest people out there and it's like, oh, what do I get? Like, you're going to get me a beer for just being tough? You're going to get me an ice pack for my face as well? You're going to carry my bags while I'm on crutches? That being tough only gets you so far. You want to be the absolute best. And there's something to be said about, for me, in my personal opinion, there's a fighter and there's a coach. There's something to be said, in my personal opinion, that you want to live to fight another day. I know Lauren Murphy is up there in age. I'm going to check right now. She's 39. She's fighting a much younger Andrade. I don't want to say much younger, but 31. Much younger Andrade, who still have a lot in the tank, and you see how the type of fight she has. She doesn't really get banged up. She does the banging up. And that's what I mean, where live to fight another day. It's like, what's the point of going through wars like this? If there's no chance for you to win, what is the point? And that's a personal question. I'm not saying this to Lauren Murphy. I'm not saying this to anyone ever being in that situation. You got to ask yourself that. That is a personal decision and question you have to ask yourself. Is my goal out there to just go out there and see how many shots I can take, or am I actually coming out there to win a goddamn fight? I said got, not god, got, G-O-T. That's all I have to say about that, because that was tough to watch, and I was there with the whole crew. Very, very tough to watch. Shout out Johnny Walker, huge win for him. Johnny Walker is one of those guys, if you fight him technical, I think you beat him. But if you fight him and you get into the scramble, awkward position where you got his leg up in the air like Paul Craig did, normally that's a takedown. He cracked Paul Craig. Paul Craig stumbled. And then he hits this guy with some backward hammer fist. Boom, boom. And then he just gets up and he's just like, yeah, what's up? I'm Johnny Walker. I'm Mr. Unpredictable. That's what makes Johnny Walker dangerous. When he fights like that, that's what made him a potential title challenger when he was knocking dudes out at 205. Now you got Paul Craig. He gets a nice single. He's picking it up. Same thing. I caught the leg of TJ. TJ punches me in the face, I think twice. And then I take him down. Paul Craig picks it up. He gets punched in the face. He gets dropped. This is why the fight game is so crazy. Because in one situation, it works. And in one situation, that technique didn't work. It actually was your beginning of your demise. So Paul Craig, sometimes the fight goes like that, you know. And he's a little bit older himself. So maybe the durability isn't all the way there. He's 35. Johnny Walker, I think he's still relatively young. Oh, nope. He's 30. I'm 33, so he's getting up there as well. But sometimes you do things and it just doesn't go your way, man. Maybe he grabs a single, he pulls guard and looks for a heel hook attempt instead of picking the single leg up where he has no hands to defend his face. And you get hit at 205 versus at 135. Fight night, I'm usually like 150 to 154 sometimes. 154 pounds sometimes, and that's like forcing the water to stay in because I keep pissing nonstop in the back room before I make that walk. That's a big difference, getting punched with that shot versus a shot from Johnny Walker while he's on one leg and he swings a cannon at your face and puts you down, you know. So sometimes the fight game just goes like that. We're not going to get into too many of these fights, but honestly, there was a lot of great fights. I can go on and on and on about this. Some honorable mentions: Bruno Ferreira knocking out Gregory Rodriguez, RoboCop. That was savage. I don't think anybody saw that coming. RoboCop's one of those guys. He's just kind of super durable. And you see him on the Contender Series, and he's been putting the lights out of a lot of people. And unfortunately, his lights were the ones that were unplugged that night. And sometimes it goes like that. Sometimes it really goes like that. Potiera, farewell fight for Mauricio Shogun Rua. I know everyone was saying his celebration was disrespectful, but then he did it at the press conference and was saying, like, this is just one of his duelist celebrations. I don't know. I try not to look into things too much. I'm pretty sure he's a fan of Shogun, and it's just one of those things when you're... His nickname is actually the duelist. He's 26 years old, so maybe he might not even know who Shogun is, to be honest, until, like seeing highlights, because Shogun's 41. So, who knows? You know what I mean? It's just one of those things. He could only truthfully answer that question. Hopefully, he wasn't trying to be disrespectful to Shogun. I know a lot of people are giving him some flack after that. But it's just one of those things. It's the rush of emotions. The same thing even with me. Like, I know I danced and, you know, did the whole Fortnite thing after fighting TJ. But even, I think, before that, or I think it was before that, I went over to him after I celebrated a little bit. I went over there. And just tell him, like, yo, man, super respect, like, for you for even taking this fight. And let him know, like, he was one of the guys I looked up to, man, for a very long time. And even though I knew and heard about him cheating from the Alpha Male squad, that he was doing this for years, I still respected the body of work that he was able to accomplish as a competitor. You know, so it is what it is. And sometimes you fight those guys that you looked up to, and sometimes you got to do what you got to do. Not sometimes, all the time you got to do what you got to do. So shout out to Mauricio Shogun Rua for stepping up and giving us one last dance. It's just tough to see your idols and some people that you looked up to go out like that so many times in a row, because that's kind of like the lasting memories that you end up having of these guys, you know? No one likes that. No one likes that at all. It sucks. Thiago Moises, he submitted Costa in the second round. Moises, I'm not being... I don't think I'm out of place for saying this. I think he's a featherweight that's had a lot of success at 155, but let's be honest here. The size difference in these fights that he's been having recently with these bigger guys. Let's look at it. Costa, Alvarez, Makachev, those guys. Those guys have been on the bigger side. Even Bobby Green. Those are bigger 55ers. Michael Johnson doesn't really count for me because he actually made 45 himself. So what I'm saying is, I think there's room for him to have a higher ceiling if he were to go down. But again, you lose something when you go down, especially when you're not used to handling the weight cut and then being able to perform like that on fight night. Like even Ally Quinta, we talked about this. We've talked about him going down to 45, but we do know if he goes down to 45, that's going to be like, it's just a tough weight cut for him. Like it's a tough weight cut for him to get down to 55. But when you look at his frame, when he fought like a Masvidal, when he fought Chiesa, when he fought those guys were so much bigger than he was because those guys were really good at cutting weight. And some people just wouldn't do as well cutting the weight. Like even talking to Marab, like he talked about going down to flyweight, he would try to do a test run. Yes, but he could possibly make it, but will he perform the same at 25? Will Al perform the same at 45? There's something to be said about that. So you got to kind of keep those things in mind and in consideration. And I think that's what it comes down to. But Moises is having success. At the end of the day, I think if he were really trying to make a legitimate run at a title, I think 45 is his best bet, but only if he does it correctly. That's all I'm saying. Congrats to him on getting the win. Costa fought tough, but eventually he got cracked and Moises was able to get him down and put that BJJ skill to the test and shine. Shout out Cody Stamann. Great, solid win. The only thing I don't understand is he keeps calling out Marab. Why do you keep calling out Marab? Let it go. Let it go. Let it go. Cody Stamann, let it go. Sometimes we lose to guys that we think that we're better than. Like, even if you are correct that you are technically, on a technical standpoint, better than Marab. On that night, Marab was better. I'm pretty sure I've gotten away with one against guys that might be better technically. At least they might feel that way. And guess what? But that night I was better. I still feel like I'm technically better than Marlon Moraes. But the night he sent me to the shadow realm, he was better that night. More focused that night. Sometimes you lose. And that's part of life. You got to let it go and move forward. Because otherwise, what are you holding on to? I don't get it. And I see him all the time at the PI. So I'm going to see him. And he might see this clip. And it's just like, I got no ill will to the guy, but it's just like, dude, what are you doing? You got to get over it at some point. You really do. The Bon Finn brothers, shout out to those guys. Dana White contender guys. They won on the contender series together. And now, both these guys won on their UFC debut. Both finishes. One guillotine choke and the other one by knockout over Terrence McKinney. And I want to speak about this Bon Finn fight with Terrence McKinney. I don't think and still respect to Bon Finn. I can tell the guy's a savage, focused, dialed in, technical, eyes open, seeing everything that's going on. McKinney, though, on the other hand, a lot of the punches looked, in my opinion, if I'm the coaches and I'm analyzing this fight, I'm looking at some of the shots where he got countered. I feel like there's a lot of heavy stepping on that lead leg, which makes it slower for you to pull back and retreat when you're getting attacked. You can't really, you're less mobile. So when you step and you're only on one foot, or you throw a kick and you're only on one foot, you're less mobile. You can't really step back because you have one leg on the ground. You can't push off. You can't explode. You're stationary. A lot of those counters happen in those positions. And even with the takedown, he got the takedown, but it was a little bit rushed. And I feel for his wrestling pedigree in the grappling department, it's way better than what actually showed. And I don't know if he took this fight lightly. I don't know if there were some outside factors. He didn't look zoned in like I felt like I've seen him in other fights. Like, yeah, he was bouncing around. That looked normal. But there was like a disconnect in the way he was throwing his strikes, even the Drew Dober fight. And I'm just making connections. I don't know shit. I'm just making connections in what I see, analyzing what I see. But the technique didn't look as sharp and as crisp as I seen it before, even in the loss to Drew Dober. So something looked a little bit strange to me in that first round. And I think his coaches might have did him a disservice telling him that he outstruck him. If I'm the coach in that situation, and I'm only saying this is like a harsh, not harsh, this is like tough love, what people will call it. And this is just being a straight shooter. And for me, this is what I want. I want people to tell me straight what they think I did wrong and what they think I could do better, and we can have a dialogue. McKinney and I, we've talked before. We're not like super tight, but I respect the dude. We've talked about certain things with like management and things like that before in the past. And I helped give him some guidance on some things that helped me get through and the things that I've dealt with in that space. So yes, it's not like a full-on relationship like myself or Marab, because maybe that I would say this behind closed doors. But this is a podcast and I got to be honest and I got to keep it real. If I am in the corner of McKinney in that one, I'm telling him to maybe let's look for combinations, get this guy to commit on his strikes because you know he's looking to counter you, and let's level change and look for our body locks, push him against the cage, and look for our reaping of the legs to get him down on the ground. Because if in that position, it at least gives you more opportunity to, one, it's going to be a boring fight, guys. Hey, I'm just fully disclosing that right now. But to win a fight like that, the way he showed up, let's press him against the cage, take away his offense, slow him down, knees to the legs, knees to the body. Let's look for back control. Let's look for our daggy standing handcuff, which is just a 2-on-1 wrist ride, the way we do it in American style wrestling, and see what happens. Let's not try to trade with this guy in space. Telling him that he was winning the striking exchanges, to me, that was a major red flag, and it made me think, and I had to go, huh. It's either I didn't really watch that first round correctly, or maybe they're seeing something differently from the corner perspective. But you can see McKinney looked very uncomfortable every time Bonfim was throwing those haymakers. And that was the difference. Bonfim was biting down his mouthpiece and committing to those strikes whenever Terrence would throw a, I don't want to say a lazy jab, but a jab that was super overcommitted where he was stepping in so hard that he was out of position that where he got countered, he couldn't pull his head back. Too much weight on that front foot. If you're going to step in and stick a jab, stick the jab, but be able to bring it back so that you can move and be mobile. He had 1 foot off the floor. Even when he threw his cross or the haymakers, it was like, and I don't want this to come off like mean or anything like that, because I'm not trying to be mean. I just think there's a lot of teachable lessons in this one that I think Terrence McKinney is going to be able to look back on and grow from this. Because if he uses this to help propel himself, and I've had bad performances. The first Jan fight, bad performance. Even though I know why I fought like that, because I didn't eat, didn't feel, whatever. I still fought like a bonehead. Hindsight's 20/20. Now, if I had communicated with my coaches, maybe we could have devised a better game plan, better strategy, or at least if they were giving me better instructions in the corner that could help me kind of slow down and kind of pick my shots more. And even if it was a boring fight, tried to make it a little bit more competitive so I could try to steal rounds. You know what I mean? So there's ways to look at this from a glass half full perspective and not just look at all the negatives. And I think McKinney's going to be able to look at this and go, okay, what can I do better? What did I do wrong? And how do I get back into the win column so that I can show the world that I'm still here to be the Terrence McKinney that people think that I can be? Not even for them, but for yourself, you know? Again, shout out to Bonfim because he fought a beautiful fight. That was a nasty knockout, and it was tough to watch because, again, like, McKinney and I aren't boys. We haven't hung out or anything like that, but talking to him on the phone, I like his stuff on social media and things like that. I like what the kid's doing. He even knocked out one of my teammates in Matt Favola, you know? Which is hard because it's like, how are you going to be cool with someone who knocked out your friend, you know? And that's the fight game is so weird, bro. It's so weird. But again, I'm just saying this is a very teachable moment for Terrence McKinney because there's so many things he's going to be able to capitalize on to improve. That a fight like him and Bonfim, if they were ever to cross paths again, I don't think it's going to be close. Because he's that much longer, more explosive, and has more tools to win, in my personal opinion, from an athletic standpoint, that I don't think he really showed. But it was Bonfim's night, and I think if he keeps progressing like that, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe he still gets the better of McKinney in the future. Great fight. That's it, guys. I'm about to get packing. I actually fly back to Vegas tomorrow. So I'll be back in Sin City doing PT again the whole week, trying to get my body back. I was able to kick the pads this past weekend, which was fun. But it makes me realize how much I miss training. And part of me is still kicking around the idea of, like, do I just get the surgery and just get the road to recovery already going? Or do I trust that the stem cells and the rehab will get me back where I don't have to go under the knife again? And it's a very tough decision to kick around. And I haven't really I feel like I haven't really gotten a straight answer from anyone on the medical side. They're kind of like, let's just try the route of PT and see what happens. They don't think it, they're like, I don't know if it will work. I'm not saying it's not going to work, because no one wants to be the person to say you definitely need surgery. And no one wants to be the person that says PT is definitely not going to work, or that PT is definitely going to work. Because I could do all this PT and it won't get better. And then it could be like, I wasted all that time for nothing, and I could have just gotten it done and been a month into surgery, rehab already, and getting ready to compete. And that's a scary thought for me. Even the same thing happened with my neck, and I eventually just got it done after seeing a different doctor. And he gave me the assurance that I needed that, hey, man, this is it. Like, you need this if there's any chance for you to actually compete again. Otherwise, you having an athletic career in this type of pain is probably not going to happen. And then I got the next surgery. So, guys, stay blessed. Stay safe out there. Thank you guys for always tuning in. If you like my shit, subscribe to my shit. Or spinning back fist, baby. Bow, bow, bow. See you guys later. Peace.